Hey, what's going on? It's At the Letters for Tuesday, July 27th, presented by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Our producer this week is Christian, Ryan, and Ben. Blue Jays have dropped 5 of 6 and in like increasingly frustrating and demoralizing and gut-punching fashion. We're coming off of Monday night's loss to the Red Sox, which the Blue Jays blow a late lead. What else is new? Drops the Blue Jays to 6-12 in one-run games. If there was a ranking or a standings for like just dispiriting defeats, I would have to think the Blue Jays would be at or near the top of it. What do you think? Do you think that the Blue Jays sort of have an uncommon frequency in which they drop those sorts of games, or is this just something that happens to every team over 162 and we just happen to pay more attention to this team than the 29 others?
We definitely happen to pay more attention to this team. I think it's also true, though, that they have had a disproportionate number of these painful losses. And, you know, you look at the ways that this can happen. You know, you can have a bullpen that's really leaky and gives up some, unexpected one-run losses, close losses, isn't reliable, and gets in the way of your Pythagorean record. Check, the Jays have that. You can have an offense that for the first 6 innings of the game is absolutely incredible, and then once it gets to late and close situations, for some reason, they have been historically bad. A very interesting impact on this season to have such a poor performance in those situations. And so you add that up, the late innings have just been a disaster for this team, where they haven't been getting reliable relief help, they haven't been getting offense, and so of course you're going to lose a lot of painful games in that situation. I don't think that it is to say that this team is doomed. I think they're a good team still. I think that they will perform better from here on, but the reality is they're too close to 500 for comfort right now.
I agree. I think the Blue Jays have actually been uniquely unfortunate in tight games and in those dispiriting losses. You know, as I mentioned, 6-12 in one-run contests. They've lost 10 times when they've had the lead in the 7th inning. And that's why you see those like Pythagorean numbers, right? Like the Blue Jays have won 7 fewer games than their Pythagorean record would suggest they ought to have based on their runs scored and runs against. No team in baseball has underperformed their run differential more. And I think these games against Boston actually, like throughout the season, are like actually pretty informative, because the Blue Jays are now 4-8 against the Red Sox this year, despite outscoring them by 8 runs. Like they've outscored them 69-61. Wow. And they're 4-8. And like there's a couple weird ones in there, right? There's a couple wacky ones. There's like an 18-4 Blue Jays blowout. There's a 13-4 Red Sox blowout. You could take those out, though, right? Like, let's lop those off from the edges. The Blue Jays are still 3-7 against the Red Sox and outscoring them 47-44.
About to get in. Young Bo Bichette.
Swing it and drive. Get up, Bo. Get out of here. And God, Bo Bichette hit a rocket into the Green Monster seats, and the Blue Jays have the lead. That's his 4th home run against Boston this season. And he comes
the Blue Jays have lost to the Red Sox by 1 run 4 times this year. In 3 of those games, the Blue Jays had the lead in the 8th inning. The Red Sox have walked them off twice. So like to me, like, you know, you just like flip 2 of those 4 games, right? Not even all of them, right? If you got really good luck, or if you had obviously what the Red Sox have had against the Blue Jays, yeah, the standings would look a lot better, but just flip like 2 of those and put, you know, take 2 wins away from the Red Sox, give 2 to the Blue Jays, 2 more losses to the Red Sox, 2 fewer losses to the Blue Jays. All of a sudden, the Blue Jays are looking at far more advantageous odds in the wild card race. They're looking better in the division. And yeah, like swing 3 or 4 of those games, and all of a sudden you're cooking with gas. So like these are kind of the margins. You know, these are the small differences that have, you know, caused this season to play out to where it is right now. And I guess the question going forward for the Blue Jays is, do you believe that luck's going to turn and that karma's going to come back to you and all of these unfortunate situations are going to turn out and you going on this charmed run over the final 2 months? Or is it possible that this is just what the season is and it continues all year?
I think the safest bet is always that what's going to happen is, you know, a reflection of the true talent that exists. You know, I wouldn't expect that this bad luck would continue. I also wouldn't expect sudden good luck. I just think that it's probably going to be a good team that wins more than it loses going forward. But it is remarkable, you know, and you mentioned those stats against the Red Sox. I'll throw another one out there that I saw on Twitter today. This one is from Isaac, IB_tweeting, who points out that the Blue Jays have a 6.06 OPS in late and close situations. I mean, that's just crazy. When you think about how good this team's offense is, then all of a sudden it gets to late and close and they are bad, even historically bad, especially when you consider just what their normal firepower is. So it's crazy. And, you know, at this point, you know, we can sit here all day and analyze, you know, why does this happen? I think the one important piece of analysis to take forward from this is that it is not sustainable. It is not a reflection of who this team is. They are not just doomed to lose every game that they, you know, enter into a close game in the late innings. They're going to start winning some of those, and the sooner the better, because, you know, as much as they have a lot of time left, you can't afford to squander a ton more time at this point in the season.
It's like the opposite of the season that the Seattle Mariners are having, if you've been like keeping up with. And I was watching that game on Monday night. I don't know if you were against the Astros, because it was on late, and I love games that are on late. And the Mariners are starting, like, I couldn't even tell you his name, man. But like, what I remember is it's the first inning, and he strikes out Jose Altuve, and the broadcasters are like, oh, that's his first big league strikeout. It's his second start as a big leaguer. So always a good sign when you go your entire first big league start without a strikeout. Like, that's probably says something about your ability level and about your talent. And so, like, of course, flash forward to the fourth inning, and it's, you know, the Astros are up by like a touchdown, and Garcia was on the hill for them, and it's like, this is over. Mariners come back to win it. Like, came back and like won big too. And they have done that reliably. Like, they've done that over and over and over again this season. The Mariners are 23-8 in one-run games. Their Pythagorean record is the inverse of their actual record. Like, their actual record is, I think, 55-46, and their Pythagorean is like the inverse of that. They're 10 games better than their Pythagorean. No other team has outperformed their record by like more than five. So you get these crazy outliers in a baseball season. Remember that one, you know, a number of years ago where the Orioles like had this insane amount of luck in one run games. Like, you see these teams, and like, I get where it gets tough, I think, for an MLB front office, especially like this week, and especially for the Blue Jays, is like, how does that inform what you do and how you approach the trade deadline? Like, how does that inform, you know, the chances that you take and how aggressive you are? Because internally, you've got your own modeling and you've got your own, you know, projections, predictions, and the way things are going to go. But like, you raise some of those stats for the Blue Jays, you know, late and close games and some of the underperformance. Do you just believe like, these players are talented inherently, it's going to come back around, we're going to go on a run, like, surely our luck is going to turn? Or do you say, well, maybe there is something here? Like, maybe there is a reason why heart rates are increasing in these stressful situations. Like, maybe there is a reason why roster construction wise, or just like player ability wise, that we aren't performing in those spots. Like, those are the really, really hard conversations and discussions, and, you know, to have, and ultimately decisions to make.
Totally. And you know, I think the Pythagorean record, these late and close numbers, like, they're all super interesting. But something like the Pythagorean, for example, it's not an entitlement. It doesn't mean that just because you score these runs, you deserve those wins. You know, really, you have to earn it each time out. And so, you know, those Orioles teams that overperformed had great bullpens, you know, your Zach Britton's, your Darren O'Day's in their prime. And the Mariners too. I mean, I'd rather have Paul Sewald and Kendall Graveman than whoever the top two have been in the Blue Jays bullpen at any moment this season. So that helps you overperform. Then the clutch hitting stuff. I mean, I don't think that's a reflection of like some lack of clutch on this Blue Jays team. They got a World Series MVP in their lineup. They've got a bunch of young guys who are playing with a ton of confidence. I truly think that's randomness. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I truly think that's randomness. I wouldn't lose a minute of sleep over wondering if this Blue Jays team can hit when it counts. But the fact is, as you say, you do now have to make these decisions in real time, and it's not easy. I think that, you know, to me, my read on where this team is they're going to be measured buyers. They are looking to add. Again, you listen to Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, what this front office says very consistently, they want to add. At the same time, are they going to be reckless and trade Austin Martin for Chris Bryant and Jordan Groshans for Max Scherzer. You know, like, I don't see that happening. I just don't, because those guys are rentals. And I think if the Blue Jays do pay a significant price, it would be for someone with control. And of course, you know, saying that, I don't think they're cut off from rentals at all. And we've talked about this a lot going back to last year's trade deadline. Robbie Ray, Taiwan Walker, those guys were rentals. You wrote this a couple days ago. Does anyone even remember the prospects they gave up? Probably not. So that's fine. You can do that again. You're not going to harm your long-term chances if you do that. So I think measured buyers is the way that I am kind of expecting the Blue Jays to operate. And according to the other people in the industry, whether it's around the Jays or with other teams, that's the expectation that I'm running into as well.
Yeah, every Blue Jays fan should play the game of can you name any of the players that the Blue Jays trade away at last year's trade deadline? There are four trades. VR, Stripling, Ray, Walker. Can you name anyone? And if you do name Alberto Rodriguez, you get extra points.
Yeah, bonus points for that.
Bonus points. Yeah, you kind of said it. I think that this year's trade deadline looks a lot like last year's, where the Blue Jays kind of try to look for some under the radar rental types, like you said, not the Scherzer types, but like a John Gray type, or like a Merrill Kelly, you know, or a Tyler Anderson. You know, those are some of the starters that they could look at. Mike Minor, like, nobody's who you're going to be breaking the prospect bank for, but you do have like this wealth of sort of advanced, fringy Rule 5 eligible prospects that could be consolidated to acquire near-term help. And also, by the way, like, if you can find somebody with a little bit of control, like the Blue Jays did with Ross Stripling last trade deadline, you can make that type of move too. And like, the price paid on that, Kendall Williams and Ryan Noda, was higher because you got more years of control with Ross Stripling. But the Blue Jays, in like an interesting way, got a head start on their like off-season shopping and their off-season work by acquiring Ross Stripling. I think they could look to do something similar this year. Like, if you, when you look at, you look back at it and you look at the and this is Baseball Reference WAR, like, you look at the wins the Blue Jays added at last year's trade deadline, for 2020 they added only about a win, right? Jonathan VR was a little bit below, Taiwan Walker was a full win, Robbie Ray and Ross Stripling kind of, yeah, were you know, basically replacement level. But they added four wins for 2021 if you include Robbie Ray, who obviously they re-signed. But a big part, I think, of them re-signing him was getting him working with Pete Walker for that month, right? And get him used to the organization, used to the staff, and comfortable in Toronto, not in Toronto, but in Toronto's uniform, obviously. I think that was a big part of that. And then Ross Stripling, who's been like, he's had his ups and downs this season, but he has been like sneaky effective at times and has contributed almost a full win above replacements. So the Blue Jays at last year's deadline added a win for 2020 and four wins for 2021. That's success, man, considering what they gave away, considering the players that they traded off, considering the Travis Bergens of this world and the Griffin Conines of this world. So I think if the Blue Jays could do something similar at this deadline, while it won't be a big, sweeping, dramatic win the deadline, here we go, 2015 type of thing, I think it will be just like, you know, sneaky good business, incremental gains, put the franchise in a better position to try to make a run in 2020 without sacrificing too much of the future, and get ahead on some of the inevitable shopping and work you're going to have to do this winter ahead of 2022.
Right. And, you know, you look at just what the options are. I think there will be a decent amount of supply for those lower end kind of veterans, you know, approaching free agency, the veterans who are about to sign like a 1 or 2 year deal in free agency. I'm thinking of guys like Brad Hand, who the Jays liked in the offseason, or Ryan Tepera, who's on the brink of free agency, your guy Eduardo Escobar, his former teammate Starling Marte, Michael Pineda, Ian Kennedy. Those guys all add to this supply, and they are not the names that the LA Dodgers are probably fixated on right now as they try to, you know, reinforce their team for a back-to-back title run, but they can still help. And, you know, I think that someone asked me a couple days ago what I saw the Blue Jays doing, and I kind of predicted Michael Pineda and Ian Kennedy for the 12th, 14th, and 18th best prospects in the Blue Jays organization. And the person with another team was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. That's about where I would see it going. So I think that's the sort of deadline we're headed for, and I think it makes sense because you look at the Jays odds, FanGraphs has them just under 30%, Baseball Reference has them just under 40%. So that's solid. And the more you add to your team, the better your odds get. So obviously worth trying to bolster the team at this point and seeing what they can do. So I think that that's kind of what we're looking at. Not mortgaging the future, but not just sitting there and saying, well, you know, the season's over. You know, we're just going to give up and you know, refuse to add to this group.
Yeah, and I think internally, like the Blue Jays' own playoff projections, postseason odds are actually higher than you know, what is publicly available. And you know, they're probably baking in like the upheaval that they've had, right? And you know, being away from home and all kinds of other factors that and information that they have access to that, you know, the FanGraphs model or the Baseball Prospectus one isn't going to account for. So I think the Blue Jays actually feel better, you know, than most do about their chances of going on a run and qualifying for the postseason. It's all like relative, right? You know, you're in the American League East, right? So like you're going to have to go on like a serious run. Like if you look at the teams in the Central, in both the AL and the NL, no fourth place team in any division has a positive run differential, and 9 of the 10 teams in the AL and NL Central do not. Like the Blue Jays have a better run differential than 9 of the 10 teams in the AL and NL Central. That's what I'm trying to say. I stumbled all over that, but you know what I mean? Like it depends who you're going to be playing, right? It depends who you're competing with to get those wildcard spots to move up in the division. Like it's always going to be tougher for the Blue Jays, right? So they're always going to have to contend with that, and they're always gonna have to factor that into what they do. But like you were saying, like there's no giving up, like there's no not adding at the deadline, there's no like not trying to get better for 2021 2022. I don't know what year it is today. Yeah. For some reason, but like there's not the Blue Jays would have to like get blown out, like abs like swept in these next three games against the Red Sox, like lose all four against the Red Sox and also see Vladimir Guerrero Jr. go down to like a season ending injury. Like that is the 1-2% outcome where they would say, okay, maybe it doesn't make sense to, you know, do anything too much, you know, to do too much at the deadline here. That's the only outcome in which you see the Blue Jays like pivoting and being like, oh, okay, maybe now we sell.
Yeah. And I think, you know, not only would those things have to happen, but I think also someone would have to come to them with a very good offer for someone like Robbie Ray or Marcus Semien. And I think that would happen because those guys would hypothetically have real value. But, you know, it's not a guarantee that someone would do better than, you know, the Blue Jays potentially issuing those guys qualifying offers. Then you get a draft pick back. I mean, there are worse outcomes than that. And it's just, you know, you think about where this team is at as a group. And, you know, obviously, you know, you need to look at the objective measures and the objective ways that you can improve this team. But I think along with that, you don't want to signal to this group that you're giving up on them in any way. And of course, there are situations where you just adapt and you say, look, the return was so great. Like we just had to make this trade. We're so happy with the return we got. But I think way, way, way more likely is that you want to signal to these players, to Vlad Jr. and to Bo Bichette and to Springer even, who you just signed to this massive deal, that you believe in them and that they can do some good things on the baseball field, especially when there's objective reason to believe that they can. You know, it's not just that you're sending this empty show of support. I think if you look at the projections, if you look at the talent, if you watch this team play, no one would deny that there's a lot of talent on this Blue Jays team.
Yeah, it's not a video game, right? Like the moves that you make and the decisions you make like have human impact on like real people, and that will bleed over into performance. I think we also like perpetually overvalue the prices that are paid for like pure rentals like a Semien or Robbie Ray. Like we're seeing now across MLB clubs like value their young players who haven't made MLB debuts yet like more than ever, like particularly like their higher upside guys. Like clubs aren't moving on from prospects until like they have to. It's like, oh, it's Rule 5 draft coming up and like we got to squeeze, you know, we got a bunch of 40 man spots that we got to think about. Like I really don't see super high prices being paid for rentals unless they're really premium dudes. So if you were to sell like a Marcus Semien or a Robbie Ray, I don't know that the return would be as impressive, or at least like enough to outweigh the million downsides to doing something like that, which, like, by the way, okay, now you're no longer trying to win in 2020. You're sending a terrible message to your clubhouse. Like, you're not, you know, like, there's so many reasons not to do that. And as you indicated, you can just qualify those guys at the end of the season. Maybe they accept those qualifying offers, which, like, great. You'll take another year of Marcus Semien at $18.9 million. You'll take a year of Robbie Ray, $18.9 million. And then also, like, the covert, like, you know, thing we're not supposed to say is that that suppresses their free agency, like, their market and free agency, because it, like, ties draft pick compensation around their necks. So that suppresses what they can get. Might even make it more likely that you end up re-signing those guys on short-term deals, which is only going to make you better going forward. So I cannot foresee all the, you know, the circumstances that we need to play out for the Blue Jays to consider that. I cannot foresee them occurring.
Yeah, it's like your 1% shot, right? It's like your 0.5% shot. And so, yeah, I think it's just not going to happen that way. And it's totally true, right? Even just moving beyond, let's say, the Jays to Scherzer or Bryant or Javi Baez, who are the other, you know, top rentals out there. And those are some of the big ones anyways.
Kimbrel's not really a rental.
Yeah, because he's got that extra year. Trevor Story would be another one. Story. So, you know, with those guys, like, don't be surprised if the return for them at first appears to be kind of light, just because we always remember those deals like Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran or Gleyber Torres for Aroldis Chapman. And, you know, of course, like, those are amazing deals that worked out so well for those teams, but it's pretty rare that those types of trades actually happen and that teams actually part with a top prospect for a rental. So, you know, you look at the Nelson Cruz deal where Tampa ended up giving up a couple of good prospects and guys that will definitely help the Twins system. It's not nothing, but they were prospects that were likely going to be forced to the edges of the 40-man of Tampa Bay this coming offseason. So they were able to part with that surplus. And I think that's more likely the kinds of trades we see, even for those top guys. So, you know, I'm not saying you can get Max Scherzer for Samad Taylor, because obviously if you can do that, you should. But I just think that generally the industry is not paying crazy prices for rentals. So, you know, for the bringing it back to the Jays, it's not like you're going to get some crazy return for Robbie Ray or Marcus Semien anyway. So just try to win, because the object of the game is to win, you know? Like, there's still a season to be played. We're in the entertainment business. It's a good young team. Like, just try to win some games and see what happens.
Yeah, if you're playing a video game, you're trying to be the best GM in the video game, I know exactly what you should do, right? But that's not what it is. It's real life. The other video game aspect is, like, we kind of underestimate how difficult it is to make trades, like how difficult it is to line up on value with another club and another front office who have their own internal valuations of your prospects and of your players. And, like, they have their own projections and modeling. Like, for every trade that's made, Ben, like, there's, like, what, 200 concepts thrown out that don't, like, go anywhere. At least no club wants to lose a trade. Everyone's trying to do what's best for their franchise, present and future. And I think that's why you see so many deals that, like, only really move the needle a little bit. Like, why so much of it is just marginal value. And, like, I can tell you with the Blue Jays, it will come down to value at this deadline, at any deadline in any free agency and any transaction. Like, it is all about cost for them, right? And they are very disciplined in the values that they put on players in free agency, money-wise, in trade, you know, just like prospect capital-wise. And if they don't get the value that they're looking for, like, they are totally prepared to walk away and just move down to the next guy on their list and to, like, you know, the second or third alternative. And I think that's why, like, you know, ultimately the guys that get moved at the deadline, they aren't always the guys we're envisioning. Like, they aren't the guys we spend, like, the first, like, the prior 3 weeks before the deadline talking about incessantly. Like, last year, you know, were we wondering where Ross Stripling's going to end up? Or were we like, like, who's going to go out and get Jonathan VR, right? Like, so, you know, I think that when you look back at this deadline, like, I think the Blue Jays are going to do something. I think they're going to make ads, but I think they're going to look like they're not going to blow anybody away. But I don't think they're going to pay great cost or, you know, great prospect price either. And I think it's probably going to look a lot like the 2020 deadline. I think that really is the model for how the Blue Jays would like this one to run.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with that, I think they'll be in, as they always are. They'll be in on everyone. They'll check on your rent, your top rentals, like your Bryants or your Trevor Stories, and they'll check on the guys with a little control, you know, a Kyle Gibson, a Craig Kimbrell. Like, those guys would be a nice middle ground. And I think that, barring that, we'll see them add a couple rental types at modest cost that can actually help this team. And there's value in doing that. So I would anticipate that we do see a couple moves between now and the end of the week. I think that the roster will look different. Not sure exactly what scale we're talking here, but I think they'll make a couple moves.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Let's step away. But when we come back, we'll talk batting order. We'll talk pitching. We'll talk a bunch of things when it comes to the Blue Jays when it continues on At the Letters. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith, our producer is Christian Ryan, and it is time now for Keeping It Light, presented by Miller Lite. Ben, we aren't going to record again until next week, and by that point, the Blue Jays will have crossed kind of the threshold of having 60 games remaining in the season. The Blue Jays have 66 games remaining as we sit here today on Tuesday, July 27th. People will remember that last year, the season was only 60 games. That was it. That was all we had. So it's kind of crazy to think that the Blue Jays still have an entire 2020 season to play. But like, when you look back on that, you know, a year later, what do you think were some of like the best and worst things that came out of that 60-game MLB season? What did we learn, Ben?
Well, I think the best thing was just that we got a season after, you know, obviously where everything was last spring, and then even the labor unrest that followed. I mean, it feels like so long ago, but there was that period of time where, you know, they really had to get on the same page, players and owners. So it was just a relief to have baseball back. Now, as I look at the Major League Baseball standings now and the stats pages, and I think of all the baseball that's already happened this year and all the baseball that we essentially lost out on last year, it really makes me think that you do need a full 6 months to, and I'm not saying 162, because, you know, you could shorten it, you could go to 144, build in some rest, make the schedule, you know, a little bit more manageable for the players, certainly for all involved. But with that being said, I think you do need the full season, just because, you know, you look at where the Blue Jays were at, for example, after 60 games this year. And at that point, Randall Grichuk was one of their best hitters. Hyunjin Ryu had yet to have any stumbles. You think about Bo Bichette, who at that point was only just starting to solidify things defensively. So much has changed, and so much does change after that 60-game mark. And so to end the season at 60 games just almost seems like you're shortchanging yourself. So as we, you know, now we're back in the full 162, I actually much, much prefer the full season and just getting all that information. Otherwise, you just, at least for me, you kind of feel, you know, a bit unmoored. Like, it's like, how do you make sense of this information that you're getting? How do you make sense of what you're seeing when it's only so few games?
Well, it's hard to project forward too, right? Like, if you just took Marcus Semien's 2020, you're like, that's who he is.
Yeah.
You would never have seen what was coming in 2021. And there's a ton of those like outlier performances there that, you know, you just couldn't put that much stock into, you know, when you're thinking about how players might perform this season. I agree with you. The season should be shorter than 162. I don't know that we'll ever see it, because there's money to be made, right? And there's, you know, gates and TV deals and all this stuff. So I don't know if you're ever going to get it shorter than 162, but I would love it if it was, because it is like way too long. But yeah, 60 is too short. I don't know where the right number is. Like, you could do 100 and just each game is one percentage point, right, of the season. That would, but that just kind of makes it easy from a, you know, math standpoint. Like, you could do, yeah, somewhere in the 130s to 140s. I'd be cool with that.
Yeah.
The thing that I'd really like to see continue are the 7-inning doubleheaders. Like, I do not ever need to see an 18-inning doubleheader ever again. And we heard comments from Rob Manfred recently that, like, that actually is the plan, to go back to 9-inning doubleheaders. I can't imagine, like, why. I just think it is so much better with the 7-inning doubleheaders. Like, I would go as far as to say all baseball games should be 7 innings. I know a lot of people don't like that. Traditionalists don't love it. fine, you can have it, but at least like let's keep the doubleheaders to seven innings each, because I have never come away from one of those things thinking like I need more baseball.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair with respect to the doubleheaders. It's interesting too, because they also had the different playoff format last year, and I don't think that that was the one that I would land on personally, but I did kind of like having a bit more wildcard intrigue. And to me, I would just probably add one more wildcard team, have a play-in game to the play-in game, then it's just, you know, you're in, okay, but you really have a tough road to the ALDS or the NLDS. That would be my move. But, you know, I didn't mind having that extra playoff team kind of as a one of in 2020.
So the other big talking point around the Blue Jays over the last week or so is a batting order shakeup. Charlie Montoyo, you know, moving things around. George Springer is now the Blue Jays leadoff hitter, as he was at the Houston Astros. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is now hitting second, which is something that I think should have happened a long, long time ago. Marcus Semien hitting third. Bo Bichette at cleanup, and Teoscar Hernandez sticks around, you know, down at in the middle of the order at number five. Ben, does this change anything? Does this have any tangible impact whatsoever, or is it much ado about nothing?
Well, I think there's a small impact. I think there is a small positive impact to this change. That being said, we should probably begin any conversation about batting lineups by saying that, you know, there's probably not as much of an impact here when it comes to how you sequence your hitters as there is to what hitters you have. That's the most important part, what hitters you have. The Blue Jays have great hitters, so they're in a good spot. It's hard to mess up this batting order. The one they had before was fine. I mean, that's probably why we didn't, you know, start up at the letters every week by roasting the Blue Jays for having this batting order that didn't work, because it was fine. They were scoring lots of runs. But I do think that Springer, Vlad as your 1-2, I mean, that's really good. Basically, the way I see it is your best hitters, you want them at the plate more. The guys who are hitting 1-2 are going to be at the plate more. So now the guys who are going to hit the most on the Blue Jays are their best hitters. That's a good thing. So to me, it's basically that simple. I don't think it's a huge shift in how we view this lineup by any stretch. But and I don't know where you land on this, Arden, but to me, it's like this is a small nudge in a good direction for a lineup that was already great.
Yeah, don't overthink it, right? Just put the best guys at the top. The only way we would come on here and, you know, talk, you know, roast the Blue Jays batting order is if it was like Santiago Espinal is leading off, yeah, and like Reese McGuire is hitting second. Like, you know, yeah, just put your best hitters at the top. I don't think that batting order position meaningfully impacts performance. Like, I just can't logically get there to the point where like that, like to me, it's a major league plate appearance, right? Like, you're a big league hitter digging in against a big league pitcher, and you've done some preparation to know what pitches he throws and how hard he throws them and how he likes to attack guys. And you are now in the box thinking about that, trying to execute a game plan and compete and trying to hit fastballs and lay off of breaking balls, essentially, unless the breaking ball is hung up over the plate, which doesn't happen that often at the big league level. You don't get that many mistakes. To me, that's the game, and it doesn't matter if there's a number two or a number three beside your name, or like when that plate appearance comes. Like, it's only in the first inning that you control that. So I don't know, man. I know it was a topic, and like, cool. Like, it's, I think that, you know, the batting order is fine however you line up these top five guys, because they're all really good. I think that, you know, George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are the Blue Jays' two best hitters all around. So if you now have a construction where those two hitters are going to see the most plate appearances over the balance of the season, great, cool. That's good. That is a good thing. But I really don't think that the order of these hitters is going to meaningfully impact their performance from plate appearance to plate appearance.
Although, of course, it's funny how they go out and score 10 runs the first yeah, game that in that order. But, you know, if you were to try to mess this top five up, I guess you could do like Teoscar, Bo, Semien, Springer, Vlad. You know, that would, yeah, be like the worst you could do. And even then, it's not like that's a bad batting order. It is hard to mess up. And I think the one offshoot that I'll be a little bit interested to watch with this is Bo and his running, because he's been really efficient on the bases this year. I think it's like 12 for 12, something like that. So with Vladdy coming up behind him so often, he did say that that has impacted his eagerness to run at times. And now he'll be on base more often with Teoscar Hernandez at bat. And of course, you still respect what Teoscar Hernandez can do because he's a great hitter having a great season. But there's a difference between Vlad and Teoscar. So maybe we see Bo run a little bit more. And considering how good he's been on the bases, that might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, the only way to screw it up would be like Bo leading off, maybe, because he doesn't see a ton of pitches, right?
Yeah.
And so many of his plate appearances kind of go 0-2. But then he sees a lot of two-strike pitches also because he fouls off a bunch of stuff. Maybe that's the only. But really, honestly, like I think you could like every night pick those five names out of the hat, right? And just line them up like that every night and have just about the same odds of winning. As you would, like, maybe, you know, you'll lose one percentage point if you happen to pull out Teoscar Hernandez as your leadoff hitter that night, or, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as your five hitter, right? Like, maybe I'll give you a percentage point or two, but I don't think there is meaningfully an impact. But I also don't think we're ever going to stop talking about batting order position. It's always going to be a thing. The Blue Jays are on this like crazy grueling stretch right now, Ben, that like is not getting talked about that much, that like they've got these two doubleheaders coming up, one in Toronto and one in LA, and they've only got like one off day over this 3-week stretch. Like it's going to end up being 25 games in 24 days if they're all played as scheduled. It's a lot, man. And that is like more than a third of the Blue Jays' remaining schedule. Like it is a lot of games in a brief amount of time, and a lot of important games too, right? Like a lot of games that really matter and are really going to dictate whether or not this team ultimately is successful and ultimately reaches the postseason. We're already seeing the Blue Jays kind of stretch out the rotation a little bit. You add in Thomas Hatch in there on Monday. Don't think that's the last time we're going to see him make a start. I bet you're going to see him start one of these doubleheaders coming up. I think the Blue Jays are going to keep looking for ways to kind of back guys off. Like Robbie Ray will take the ball every 5 days. Like he wants to. He wants to be in that routine, but it just cannot possibly hurt to get him an extra day when you can. And obviously, we've seen Hyunjin Ryu perform a bit better with a bit more rest, and we've seen him take the mound at times this year, not looking like he's feeling his best or not looking like he can command his changeup the way that he needs to. But like it is kind of interesting that, you know, the Blue Jays have hit this, you know, for a number of reasons, a super crucial important stretch of the season, going back to Toronto, trade deadline, trying to stay in the wild card race, all these things without much room for rest. And there's going to be some interesting roster management coming up, I think, over the next several weeks as they try to navigate this stretch.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And, you know, the sooner you can get, not that you're going to rush him, but, you know, if Nate Pearson can come back at the end of that stretch, that would be great. If Alek Manoah comes back midway through, which we expect him to, that would help. And if they can add to the roster via the trades, do it. You know, this is the time to reinforce the staff because they are facing such a grueling stretch. And I think it is funny how, at least to my ears, that seems like no one's talking about it. I kind of feel like it's because it's not on one calendar month. You know what I mean? Like this half of it is in July and then the other half is in August. So you don't see this chunk of blue and white on the schedule uninterrupted. But the reality is they're still up against this really tough stretch. And during that stretch as well, they have to relocate their entire selves with no off days. They have to make a cross-country move during a pandemic, get used to international travel again for the first time. Like it's a lot going on, not an excuse. Like if they are going to win, they have to overcome this. That's just it. That's the reality. But it's a lot of baseball coming up in a short period of time.
And you're playing really important games the whole time. Like there's not a lot of Baltimore games in there. You're playing the Red Sox a ton. You're playing four games against Cleveland, which is a team that like you are kind of neck and neck with in the wild card race right now. You got games against the Angels in there. We'll see if they're in the hunt or not. Like, man, they're, you know, Mike Trout's a pretty good trade deadline acquisition. Getting back from injury. You're hanging around, and you're also playing Seattle in there, which, you know, as we mentioned in the top half, like is kind of the surprise team in the hunt, and you would expect that they are going to, you know, even if they kind of regress to the mean with their luck a little bit, at least be hanging around, at least still be in the conversation. Really important games. Like it's not like you're, you know, going to see, you know, Baltimore and Detroit every night. Like you are seeing really, you know, competitive teams, teams that are trying to win, teams that are like playing their hardest, and you need wins in these spots. So, you know, I'm sure at some point there's going to be like the Blue Jays are relatively healthy right now. At some point, something's going to happen. The Blue Jays have already lost starters twice this year when they've fallen downstairs. So like at some point, like something's going to happen and something's going to throw a wrench into this. Like we already saw they had to kind of bring up Kirby Snead on Monday because like they were like looking around the bullpen like, oh geez, like, we've had to use our bullpen a ton lately. Like we just need some help out here. Like, you know, it'll be interesting to see who kind of gets forced into the majors at times if there are injuries, you know, if, you know, situations do arise. Like you said, Nate Pearson obviously you know is going to come up and impact this bullpen at some point, but like could Kevin Smith's number be getting called at a certain point coming up, right? Like who are some of the, you know, players within the system, maybe not on the 40 man right now, but who could find themselves playing roles on this team down the stretch? Remember, you know, at this time last year, I don't know that we were talking about Alejandro Kirk being on the Toronto Blue Jays at any point in the 2020 season. Then all of a sudden he came up. So, you know, I am interested to see how things break in that regard.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just about to mention Kevin Smith because I think that if there were more opportunity on this Blue Jays team right now, he'd be here. Like, I think that he would be. He's proving that he's ready. I think that you look at the numbers and he's got, I want to say 16 home runs. Keep in mind, AAA season started a month later. And his OPS is around 900, just playing really well, playing multiple positions. So I think if their position player core was even just a little bit more depleted, I think he'd already be up. And so if there's a need, I think he's got to be the first guy that they call on at this point.
Yeah. If Gabriel Moreno hadn't gotten hurt, like that's a guy that we would be talking about as well.
Right? Yeah.
Because even look at the catching situation right now. Danny Jansen injured his hamstring again. So right now you're running with Alejandro Kirk and Reese McGuire and a bit of a timeshare. I mean, you're going to see Kirk catch Ray because they've got like that great chemistry. You're going to see Reese McGuire catch Hyunjin Ryu because he's got more experience doing it. And then I guess they're just going to, you know, flip the other three games on balance. But like, you know, still with Reese McGuire, you aren't getting a ton offensively there, obviously. And even defensively, like it's been a little shoddy at times with him of late. And then with Alejandro Kirk, like, hey, man, great with the stick. But, you know, obviously still learning the game defensively at the big league level. Just still learning how to be not only a big leaguer, but a professional, because this does not have a ton of professional experience. So I do kind of like if Gabe Moreno had stayed healthy and stayed productive, that would have been a big topic over the next month or so of like, do they bring this guy to the majors and start his big league career now to impact this this club behind the plate?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at the latest prospect rankings and Baseball America has Gabriel Moreno at 12 in baseball. I mean, that's a really impressive rise for a young catcher. And it's, you know, Kirk, I just like what Kirk brings more than McGuire. I think that, you know, obviously you need two catchers. Obviously, McGuire's going to play. They need him at this point. But I would do 60-40 Kirk. I just think that, you know, and Kirk hasn't proven that he's a, you know, a smooth defender by any stretch and that he's got it all figured out. But, you know, as you mentioned there with McGuire, like, I'm not really impressed by what I'm seeing from him defensively. You just see some balls just getting past him. You know, balls, I'm not talking balls in the dirt here, balls in the air. They're just getting past him. And you combine that with the offense that's fallen back down to earth. And I'd rather take the shot on the offensive upside of Alejandro Kirk and see what he can do. So we'll see where this leads. Obviously, kind of an ever-evolving situation when it comes to catching playing time. But I think the Jays' chances improve when Kirk is back there.
Yeah, I agree with you. You mentioned those prospect rankings, and that kind of, this is something that's been rattling around in my head for a little while, and I haven't like figured out how I want to say it, so I'm just gonna let the words come out of my mouth and we'll just go on this journey together.
All right.
Because I do want to end like the podcast on a bit of a positive note. Like, sour times, man, around the Blue Jays right now with the games that they're losing and just the luck they've had and just every, you know, it's gut punch after gut punch, man. It's been really rough and just the whole season's been tough, man, being away from home. All the injury adversity that they've faced, like, it just has been a rough year. Look back to 2016, right? When the Blue Jays were last in the legitimate playoffs. Obviously, they went last year, but they last actually qualified for a wild card game. Who did they play in that game? The Baltimore Orioles beat them. Who did they then go on to play in the ALDS? Texas Rangers beat them. Look at where the Texas Rangers are right now and where the Baltimore Orioles are right now and then look at where the Blue Jays are and know that all three of those teams have gone through like rebuilding processes. Like all three of those teams are completely different today than they were in 2016 and have like torn down in the case of like the Rangers and Orioles trying to build back up. In the case of the Blue Jays, built back up, like still obviously need help, right? Still need acquisitions, still places to improve. Every team is flawed, of course, but like, we do forget that the Toronto Blue Jays lost 95 times 2 years ago, right? And then went back to the postseason in 2020. And then now are in a wild card race in 2021. Like, I don't know if the Blue Jays are going to qualify for the postseason this year. Like, you don't know. Nobody knows. I do know the Texas Rangers aren't. And I do know the Baltimore Orioles aren't. And I feel pretty good at predicting that next season, neither of those teams are going to be postseason clubs unless something dramatic and unforeseen happens. While it is easy to foresee the Toronto Blue Jays continuing to get better with a really talented young core already in the big leagues, some big ticket free agent acquisitions in Hyunjin Ryu and George Springer, more money to spend this coming winter to continue to supplement the roster. And oh, by the way, look at those prospect lists, which like are worth what they're worth. I get it. But you've got like 6 or 7 Blue Jays on top 100s from various sources. There is a lot of high upside talent coming up through this farm system. Like the Blue Jays have turned this thing around really, really quickly. And I think it's just kind of helpful to have that perspective of like 2016, all three of these teams were postseason clubs, the Orioles, the Rangers, and the Blue Jays. And immediately after that, all three of those teams underwent rebuilds. And look at where the Blue Jays are right now, and look at where the Orioles and Rangers are right now, and think about how you feel about those teams' chances in the near and medium term.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, you look at just where the Blue Jays are as an organization, which, you know, in the aftermath of a tough loss is not the first impulse, right? The first impulse is to blame the reliever or blame the umpire or blame Charlie Montoyo. But when you do zoom out, then you see an organization that is trending toward winning for what looks to be a pretty long time. And they've made a lot of strides on that front. As you said, they lost 95 games 2 years ago. Last year, they were more like a 500 team. This year, they're playing like 500, but I still think they're better than what they've shown so far. Still think there's more upside there. And as you look ahead, there is reason for optimism. So none of that takes away from the importance of the 21 season and the importance of making the most of a year where you have Robbie Ray and Marcus Semien performing at peak levels. And Vlad Jr. is the best hitter in baseball, which you can't just assume he'll be that every year. So want to make the most of 2021. Don't want to squander what's in front of them. But also don't want to lose sight of the fact that this team has made some significant progress with a lot of work remaining. No doubt there is a lot of work remaining on this roster and even in this farm system. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think the kinds of conversations that we're going to be having around this team as we look ahead are, how do they add, you know, how do they compete at the top of their division, as opposed to, how do they emerge from this rebuild that's now been going on for 4 years and they're still in it? I know which one of those conversations is more interesting to have.
It's just nice to be, talking about acquisitions and not talking about like selling players and not talking about like, oh, who can they trade, right? And like, what kind of assets can they accumulate, and being like, oh yeah, the Blue Jays got, you know, whatever, like Seattle's like number 14 and 15 prospects. Like, interesting. This guy's got some spin on his fastball. Yeah. Like, we don't have to have those conversations anymore. It's more so, hey, who could the Blue Jays go out and acquire? It's how do they kind of play their cards intelligently to make something of the like great situation that they are in? Like, they're going to enter this offseason, however this season goes, right? Look, the playoff odds will tell you most likely Blue Jays don't reach the postseason. Still got a shot of doing it. We'll see if it happens. However it plays out, Blue Jays are going to enter the offseason like with a bunch of money to spend, with a ton of prospect capital to trade with, and as you said, with a core on this roster currently like of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, who are each having like 3, 4, 5 win seasons, of George Springer, who has had a tremendous career and should continue to, of Hyunjin Ryu, who has been like just everything you could have hoped for after he signed a 4-year, $80 million contract. And with, you know, players coming up that you can supplement from within and continue to kind of like flood high upside talent onto your roster, or you could use them to go out and acquire really good players from elsewhere. Like, I just think that, like, objectively, like, if you pull back, the Blue Jays are in a really good position. This season has just been somewhat uniquely torturous in just how like dispiriting and disappointing a lot of the results and outcomes have been. But I don't think that takes away from the kind of great, you know, the forest. I don't think that those trees take away the forest of where the Blue Jays are at.
Yeah, totally true. You know, sometimes I think back to, you know, January when it seemed like the Jays were missing out on every free agent. And I think, you know, if you had said at that point, all right, the Jays are going to land George Springer and Marcus Semien and Vlad Jr. will be the best hitter in baseball. I mean, those are some good, you know, developments for this franchise. Now, at the same time, if you had said that to me and also added somehow the Jays are just going to be around 500, I'd be like, that's weird. They are somehow not taking advantage of some very, very good developments. And I would have certainly projected this team to be ahead of where they are if you had said they're going to have Springer and Vlad's going to be, you know, Juan Soto level, Ronald Acuna level talent and doing it every night. So here we are. You know, we'll see where it leads. But it's been, you know, it's been a very interesting season. There's no question there.
And also, by the way, they're going to get like a Marcus Semien, like, you know, bounce back, fall bounce backs that's on par with his MVP level. Like, Bo Bichette's going to take another step. They're going to have four All-Stars. They're going to have a plus 85 run differential.
Manoa's going to come up. And
right? Manoa is going to like force his way through the door. All 6'7", 260 of them is just going to like Kool-Aid man his way into the big leagues and like just, you know, could like have these dominant outings. You know, really the only thing is like Nate Pearson's going to have like a really forgettable year and he's going to be hurt all the time and that's going to suck. But, oh, by the way, you fixed Robbie Ray and he's turned into like one of the better starters in the American League and he throws strikes all of a sudden. I'm going to tell you all that information in the offseason. And also, oh, by the way, it's going to be a 500 team.
That's why it's so weird. It's honestly like it doesn't add up. And I guess this just brings us back to what we talked about off the top, right? It's like, how do all those good things happen? And they're only around 500. They should be better. You know, it is weird. And, you know, of course, bullpen not good. And, you know, Kirby Yates obviously hurt. A lot of underperformance, a lot of injuries in the bullpen. And they have been very, very bad when it comes to the late and close hitting. So there you go. And again, not predictive. So what we see going forward is not determined by what we've seen in the first 4 months.
No, it is not. It'll be interesting to see what we do see going forward. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. My name's Arden Zwelling. Our producer is Christian Ryan. As always, you can email us at the letters at sportsnet.ca. Okay, topic ideas, keep it light ideas, questions, comments, concerns, whatever you got. At the letters at sportsnet.ca. I want to thank you as always for listening. We'll talk to you next week on At the Letters.